It's a little late for a phone call, and yet Joe Biden offering to ring up Emmanuel Macron for the first time since the United States poached a multi-billion dollar submarine contract and sprang the surprise of an Australia-UK-US military alliance. Excluded are the French and their sizable Indo-Pacific fleet. For all those stateside leaders who love Paris and refer to France as America's oldest ally, how much can the French trust Washington? The first ever recall of a French ambassador to the U.S. for consultations comes just months after a new U.S. Secretary of State fondly waxed lyrical in French on a visit here where he attended high school. Did Antony Blinken and his boss not see that last week's surprise would feel like a humiliation? How much does the U.S. actually care? On the eve of Joe Biden's first speech as U.S. president before the U.N. General Assembly on Tuesday, the first since the fall of Kabul forced allies to follow along with Washington's precipitated departure from Afghanistan, does this administration get the rest of the world any better than its predecessors? Ultimately, what, if any, are the consequences when the world's dominant superpower is accused of turning NATO allies into fools? Today in the France 24 debate, how much damage to the transatlantic alliance? With us, member of the French Parliament, Natalia Pouzire from Emmanuel Macron's La République en Marche party. Thank you for being with us.
Good evening.
We're with former U.S. diplomat Jeffrey Hawkins, senior fellow at the think tank IRIS. How are you?
How are you? Good.
All right. Alice Panier heads the French International Relations Institute, IFRI's Geopolitics of Technology program. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And from Paris, Craig Capitis, contributing editor at Quartz. How are you?
Okay.
The France 24 debate on Facebook and Twitter, hashtag F24debate. Diplomacy appears to be the art of selective memory these days, with conflicting claims of who said what to whom in the run-up to last week's bombshell out of Washington. Camille Nedelec has more.
Even biking by the beach on a sunny day, U.S. President Joe Biden couldn't escape the diplomatic storm.
Mr. President, what will you tell Emmanuel Macron?
Mr. President, when are you going to call Macron?
He gave nothing away, but it's the U.S. president himself who's asked to call Emmanuel Macron in the coming days, presumably in a bid to placate Paris. It comes in the wake of a nuclear submarine deal between the US, UK and Australia, which broke a previous agreement Canberra had with France. The deal had been worth over 50 billion euros.
Encore faut-il qu'on échange avec nos partenaires et qu'on voit comment ils entendent se sortir de ce contrat. Puisqu'il y a des clauses qui ont été signées, il y a toute une procédure qui a été prévue. Évidemment qu'il faudra des compensations. Mais ça, c'est le travail qui va être fait maintenant parce qu'on a besoin de ces clarifications et de l'explication.
Britain also felt France's wrath, with Paris reportedly cancelling a meeting scheduled this week between the French Defence Minister Florence Parly and British counterpart Ben Wallace. Despite France dismissing the UK as opportunistic, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson struck a conciliatory note.
It is a very friendly relationship, an entente cordiale that goes back a century or more and is absolutely vital for us. Our love of France, our admiration of France is ineradicable.
On Tuesday, hundreds of nations will reconvene at the UN General Assembly, where the French Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian will be addressing the dispute with his US counterparts.
Yeah, Natalia Pouzirev, there's been a huddling of European foreign affairs ministers in New York as we've been speaking ahead of at this outset of UN week, as it's known there. France recalling the ambassador, some saying that it's going too far, some saying it's not going far enough. Your thoughts on this unprecedented move?
Yes, indeed. I think it's a severe setback for our shipyards, but moreover, it's really a loss of trust amongst allies, and I think it's understandable that the reaction of France was so, because the surprise was huge, and so the reaction was really big. But now certainly is the time to calm down.
Do you personally trust the Americans less than before?
I think yes. There's a breach in the trust we had, and I think it's The timing is not good as well, because it's the time to gather, you know, forces, energy regarding the strategic challenges that we are facing in this area.
The strategic challenges being China.
Yes, China. Yes, and the freedom of navigation, and you know, for Europe, this region is very important for all the goods which are transferring from the Pacific Ocean to Indian Ocean, then to Europe.
Jeffrey Hawkins, your reaction when you hear Natalia Puzyarov saying she trusts Americans less than before?
My reaction, first of all, is one of great pain, and you know, perhaps love means never having to say you're sorry. I think in this case, there are some apologies that need to be made. And it's interesting because you've got to like actually parse this out a little bit. On the one hand, I think the French are deeply angered at the Australians because they broke the contract. I think their anger at the Americans is not so much about that. It's much more about we're an Indo-Pacific power. You know, we have possessions in the Pacific. We have troops, 7,000 troops deployed in the Pacific. Why weren't we included in this deal? And why were we lied to, at least by omission, if not by commission, throughout these Australian-American-UK negotiations? I don't know. And it's a really poor way of proceeding, particularly from a president throughout his campaign that talked about putting the 4 years of the Trump administration behind us and really moving into a renewed partnership with our allies. This is not the way to do it, no matter what the strategic, you know, implications of China and South China Sea and all the rest. This kind of unilateralism doesn't work, and it certainly doesn't work in the French case.
All right, on the hashtag F24 debate, not everyone is taking France's side. When we asked why can't France trust the U.S., Live Monitor tweeted, maybe because you are system administrators at NATO and spy on all your allies, and maybe because you bugged all of Air France business class and feed into info to French firms. It is a reference, Alice Pannier, to something that happened a while back, the French getting caught eavesdropping on Americans in business class.
Right.
It's a long time ago. But still, there is this feeling, oh, it's just part of the great game. Is it?
Well, trust is a difficult notion in international relations, for sure, even in alliances. Eavesdropping on allies is something to be denounced, and at the same time, pretty much every country does it. So, you know, there is an ambiguity about trust in alliances, for sure. But I think, you know, coming back to what was just said a minute ago, it's about trust within the France-US relationship, but it's also about trust within the France-UK relationship and in the France-Australia relationship. It's this, you know, triple bilateral relationships that were challenged, and all of the each of the three relationship has been central in France's, you know, grand strategy, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Australia being at the core of France's Indo-Pacific strategy, the UK being at the core of France's European security and even broader Middle East and North Africa strategy, and the US being obviously, you know, the one partner that each country, you know, within the transatlantic alliance really counts upon.
So I asked you about eavesdropping because on the one hand, there are those saying the French were wronged and that this is a breach of trust. And on the other hand, people saying, why didn't French intelligence pick up on, read the tea leaves? We're now getting this Monday word that back in June, the French said, do you want those submarines nuclear powered to the Australians? The first time we're hearing about that. So they got a wind in June only. Is it an intelligence failure on the part of the French to be surprised?
You have to ask yourself, obviously, about the intelligence dimension. Why was it not picked up earlier? I think there were doubts about where the contract was headed, and there was there were hints that the Australians were considering their options. But I think what was not foreseen was, you know, a grouping of France's three of its closest allies secretly preparing a deal, and the way that they made it secret among themselves, I think even if the French had sort of eavesdropped and learned about it ahead of time doesn't mean that it wasn't a behavior to be condemned within an alliance.
Craig Capitis, you heard Jeffrey Hawkins there saying he doesn't know why those three nations left the French out. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Francois, albeit the submarine business is sometimes hard to fathom, figuring out French-American relations is not. It's actually quite easy. Now, I know I'm allowed only one historical reference. The French and the Americans have never gotten on for over 200 years. And let's start with the first dispatch that was ever sent back to France in 1796 by Pierre Adé, who was the foreign minister. At the time, Adé arrived in the United States with a French flag, which he gave to George Washington. And he said to Washington, "The American flag is now on display at the National Convention. I hope you can take this flag and put it in the House of Representatives." It never went there. It immediately went into storage. And one of the first dispatches Adé sent back to France read, he said that the flag would now become the fodder for the rodents and the insects that live in America's
attic. Okay, but fast forward 225 years, please.
Fast forward to now, it's the same thing. The NSA was spying on President Macron just recently, tapping his phone calls. The history of America and France comes down to the fact that France in America is not trusted. Dick Cheney has said this. John Kerry has said this. Well, okay, it's because you want to know the real truth? It's because you don't speak English. And you're very impressed. The French are very impressed with someone like Kerry or Blinken who can come over here and vous voyez instead of tutoyer. And the French make a big deal about this because the French, and this is my home. I've lived here for over 30 years, are very formal. They're very big on etiquette, and they expect their friends to reciprocate. The Americans never have. And if you look at French history with the United States, over 200 years of it, you'll see it. In fact, Dick Cheney, whether you like the man or not, once said on national TV, quote, "It's difficult to take the French seriously." And no one in America disagreed with him.
Natalia Pouzireff, is it a language problem? They're just not Anglo-Saxons?
Yes, there's a cultural difference, obviously. But still, I think that we passed through lows and highs, and 2003 was not a good period. But since then, I think we got an understanding. We tried to reconciliate, even under the Trump administration, European point of view and U.S. point of view in terms of defense matters. And then there was a momentum with Joe Biden coming into power. We really thought this is the timing, the right timing to reconsider this strategic partnership, this transatlantic partnership. And this was the right time because there has been some NATO controversy, but for sure, we even if we strengthen the European defense pillar, it's nothing against NATO. So I think everyone, after you know a few months, came to a common understanding. And then Indo-Pacific area was assessed by both sides of the Atlantic as very important, of a great importance for Europe, for the United States, for Australia, for other partners we have in the area. So I don't understand why we were left out of this alliance. Really, for me, it's especially France has, you know, been demonstrating that we are willing to engage in this area, let's say engage, at least navigate across the oceans, deploy men. We have 7,000 of them over there. And the French Navy is in very good terms with the U.S. Navy. They are conducting many exercises. That's why it was looked at as a stabbing in the back.
Yeah, you mentioned 2003. That was a low when France voted against invading Iraq at the UN Security Council. We all remember those images from back then. Adi Spanier, of course, since that time, what you had Donald Trump elected, but in between you had Barack Obama. So the French suddenly loved the United States again. Then they had Donald Trump. They hated again. Up and down and up and down. Is this just a cycle, or is this time, is there a breach in that Atlantic alliance that Natalia Puzyreff was talking about?
I think the Obama era was certainly a high in terms of the public opinion, but generally speaking, I think the French tend to have a very moderate approach towards the U.S., that is cautious because it considers that the U.S., as the great power that it is, will act according to its own interests. And that's the case even during the Obama era. And actually, the Obama years was the time when the pivot to Asia policy, was formulated. It was also the time when the U.S. in 2013 in Syria decided not to intervene against Bashar al-Assad's use of chemical weapons.
That left the French out on a limb.
It's now in France. It's marked the 2013 summer, the August U.S. decision. It made a huge mark in France, not so much on the other side of the Atlantic, to be honest. It's not remembered as much.
So is this a turning point, what's happening
so,
now?
So, yes and no, in the sense that I think it's a turning point in terms of the greater geopolitical context, because it's one of the newer 21st century meeting the China challenge alliance. So it's the shape of the alliances to come, in a way, with new groupings of countries like US, UK, and Australia. At the same time, it's for those countries not so much a turning point because they have the Five Eyes Agreement. They've been allies and very close allies. And in many ways, in France, we fail to understand how much indeed these Anglosphere of intelligence alliances, how strong it is. We fail to understand that very often. That's why we're not included. It's historical, it's language, it's intelligence ties. But it's a turning point in terms of the way the transatlantic relationship is balancing against other alliances that the U.S. is leading.
Jeffrey Hawkins, you hear what Aditya is saying. There was a chance to have a united front in the Pacific, and it's gone.
I think what we need to do is first disassociate the strategic issues of France and the United States from political decisions that are made by various administrations, whether in France or abroad. So Bush decides to invade Iraq and the French don't follow. That leads to a political division between the two of us. But you want to talk history. I mean, within a couple of kilometers of my house, there's a huge monument to Lafayette, another huge monument to Pershing, a monument to American dead. There's an American cemetery there. So for every French flag that got put in some closet in Congress, there are dead French men and women and dead American women who died defending the same values. And then you move beyond that. I mean, America, whatever happened with the Australians and the UK, in large part helps France, secure its security in Europe and helps all of the EU, and not just France, but other members, particularly those who are concerned with Russia. And then finally, on a day-to-day basis as a diplomat, the cooperation between France and the United States is wide and deep, and particularly on the military side. Mm-hmm. So, you talk about, say, fighting terrorism in Africa, for example. French deployments are supported by American troops. We're very closely linked. So, yes, there are huge political differences, sometimes exacerbated by politicians looking to make hay from them. But the basic strategic facts and the cooperation on the ground don't suggest to me a rupture now, even if France is justifiably unhappy about what's happening.
All right, I want to pick up on that point. When we come back, stay with us. You're watching the France 24 debate. Welcome. If you're just joining us, it's the France 24 debate. We're talking about the Atlantic Alliance and just how much it's been rattled by that submarine contract poached from the French by the Americans, and this surprise announcement of a new military alliance that involves Australia and the UK and leaves out France. We're talking about it with member of the French Parliament, Natalia Puzyreff of Emmanuel Macron's La République En Marche party, former U.S. diplomat Jeffrey Hawkins, research fellow at the think tank IRIS, Alice Panier, who heads the French International Relations Institute's Geopolitics of Technology program, and Craig Capitis, contributing editor at Quartz. After the Trump years, who thought there would be this falling out when Joe Biden addressed a NATO summit just 2 months ago.
Russia and China are both seeking to drive a wedge in our transatlantic solidarity. We're seeing an increase in malicious cyber activity. But our alliance is a strong foundation on which we can, our collective security and our shared prosperity can continue to be built.
Craig Capitis, in part one, we discussed how the French misread perhaps the situation here. Did the U.S. misread it as well?
I don't think so. I think the U.S. just didn't tell the French because it's not in America's interest to tell the French. They bamboozled the French. And now we, of course, hear bang the drum loudly, Lafayette, nous voilà, all of these things. Well, there's probably a bit of truth to that. The issue goes much deeper, and it goes to what one of your guests was, I think it was Natalie, she was talking about America as a superpower. As former foreign minister Herbert Verdrain said in 1999, and he got a lot of press about this, he said, America is no longer a superpower. He defined it as a hyperpower. He actually coined that term. And what we see here is America acting as this hyperpower. It doesn't care about its superpower, friends. If they did care about the French and the alliance, someone should have picked up a phone and called Macron. They did not. That's a fact. Lafayette, we're not here.
So foreign minister at the time, remember it was 1999, we can call up the quote, Hubert Védrine was then the foreign minister of France. He said, we cannot accept neither a world that's politically unipolar nor a world that's culturally uniform, nor the unilateralism of the only hyperpower. And that term of hyperpower, we've kind of forgotten it a little bit, Natalia Pouzyreff, because of the fact that you have had the confrontations with Russia over the last decade, and most importantly, China, which has risen. So there are rivals now to the U.S. as such. But is the U.S., when you take stock of all that's happened in the last week, a hyperpower?
Hyperpower, superpower anyway. With great power comes great responsibility. Responsibility towards your allies. It's a matter of respect.
But if they're a hyperpower, their power is unchecked, is kind of the implication.
Yeah, but it's not, I insist on that, it's not the right timing. Because, you know, even if they don't want to have the French Navy support some actions like ensuring that there's some freedom of cruising in those waters, the U.S. might go to look for the political support of European countries. So I think it's a way of gambling on the fact that the European will always say yes to the US.
Alice Pannier, we've spent a lot of time in this studio over the past month bemoaning the fact that there was this precipitous rush to get out of Kabul and that all the other powers were dependent on the United States. So the US is, as Craig says, a hyperpower.
Well, you know, you can also take things the other way around, saying, well, the move out of Kabul was also the way it was managed or mismanaged, also demonstrated the limits of the U.S. power, of the U.S. military power, failure to consult or coordinate with allies, considering that alliances and partnerships are one of the U.S.'s great strengths. That it's only a superpower by, you know, other countries allowing it to be somehow because they sort of team up with the U.S. or follow along. So when the U.S. acts unilaterally, it hurts its own interests. In the present case, you know, sort of seemingly pitching the Pacific allies against the transatlantic
allies. When the U.S. acts unilaterally, it's hurting its own interests.
Yes, for sure.
Mm. Craig Capitis, you're stating the opposite.
No, I think I'm not stating the opposite. I think when the U.S. acts unilaterally now in a global world, it is hurting its own interests. But I think you have to also recognize whether it's Biden or Trump, America has becoming a more of a closed country. It does not want to embrace globalism. You're seeing a lot of nationalism, nationalistic ideas there. So. What surprises me in this entire discussion is why didn't Joe Biden pick up a phone and tell Macron? That's all he had to do. He obviously felt that this was not important, and I don't think you need a degree in psychology or psychiatry to realize that's the reason he didn't call.
An oversight? You agree with that, Jeffrey Hawkins?
No, I don't agree with that. I mean, I have...
Because the official line is, it was the Australian's job to call me.
I have to believe... And we're not talking about just a call a day in advance of this announcement. I mean, and there are several, you know, aspects to this deal. And it's not just a contract that got canceled. It's also who are we going to be working with in the Indo-Pacific region vis-a-vis the Chinese strategic threat? And I think France should have been included in that conversation. And the fact that we didn't really says a lot. And I think the point that...
But what does it say? Because what's particularly galling, right, yeah, is the fact that the French submarine contract also included a U.S. company, Lockheed Martin.
Right, right, right.
And to... It's one thing to outbid or to reverse a bid at the outset, but here it was 5 years in. There were Australian contractors in Cherbourg.
And I do think that is more a Franco-Australian problem than a Franco-American one.
But then why would the U.S. poach the contract?
Well, I'm not sure that we have. At this point, what the White House has put out is they're saying we're embarking on an 18-month program to look at the ways that the U.K. and the U.S. can share its technology with Australia. I'm not sure that there is a contract in the immediate future. Now, there may well be one longer down the line, but I don't think for the U.S. this was not about a submarine contract. For Australia, it wasn't part about that. For the U.S., this was pivoting towards Asia. What the White House has sort of put out through leaks in the press and all the rest is, we were surprised by how upset the French were. We didn't realize they were going to be that angry. I think if somebody as experienced as Tony Blinken or Jake Sullivan can't figure that out before making this announcement, then we have a problem in the White House. And so they should have known, and they should have worked it a long time.
So again, which is it? Which is it? Is it that they an oversight on the part of the U.S. Secretary of State, the National Security Advisor that you mentioned, or is it that they don't care?
I don't think that it's they don't care. I don't think Perhaps what's out in the press is true, that they didn't fully appreciate how strongly the French would react. But this is an important thing. And, France is important for all kinds of reasons. They got a veto in the National Security Council. They're a nuclear power. You know, there's all reasons. And it's not just China we're talking about, right? It's Russia also. And, for example, Russia's been very active in Africa of late, and particularly in Mali and Central African Republic, where I was ambassador. The French are concerned about that. The Americans are concerned about that. Those are the kinds of things that we should be working on together and not fighting over a submarine contract with another ally. That's not right.
Francois, if I can add here, this is why I don't buy that line. The United States, going back to the 50s, was involved in an organization called CETO, rhymes with NATO, Southeast Asia Treaty Organization. France was part of that. That organization ended in 1975 for a whole bunch of reasons. Nonetheless, that organization's spear tip was to contain China. So historically, between France and the United States, between the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the State Department and the defense ministries, there was a common language on France cooperating with the United States, Britain, and other countries, Australia, to combat the so-called Chinese threat. It had existed. So someone forgot about this history that people seem to don't have the time to pay attention to anymore. They could have even dug up the same stationery, called it CETO again, and saved a few bucks.
Well, I hear that, but since then, you know, there was a Hu Jintao period. Now it's Xi Jinping. Things have changed dramatically, and I think that we could understand that Australia is shifting its interest and switching for nuclear powered submarines that would give more autonomy at sea. We could understand that, but still we had not been warned, and so it requires clarification. There are things we can understand about how the scene has changed in this region, and I think a line has been crossed by China regarding Hong Kong. But at that time, nobody, well, there were no strong reactions. So maybe it's the time that something is implemented. But I don't see why the US, Australia and UK should play it on just on their side. I think it's not appropriate.
Should go solo is what you're saying.
Yes, solo.
There's there's one other aspect too, and it's a parochial one. But Emmanuel Macron is going to have an election next year, and so just from the political optics of this, this is very bad, and we should have been sensitive to that. I mean, that, you know, it doesn't mean that we're not necessarily going to do what we're going to do, but you got to massage it in a certain way and work on at least on the PR part of it so that you don't politically hurt somebody that you're trying to work with.
All right. On the one hand, there is the relationship between France and the United States, which we've talked about. Let's take a look at Britain. It remains a close military ally of France. There's the 2010 Lancaster House Treaty, which developed joint training and intelligence sharing. Now, though, France's foreign minister pouring scorn on a post-Brexit UK, Jean-Yves Le Drian, explaining why he only recalled ambassadors to Australia and the US.
With Great Britain, there is no need. We know their constant opportunism, so there's no need to bring our ambassador to explain it to us. In fact, in this matter, Great Britain is a bit of a fifth wheel.
Natalia Pouzyreff.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the French are very unhappy and angry about the situation, and we really think that, of course, it's good for global Britain. We can understand that on the political side. Then on the long term,
did the foreign minister score some easy points there? Because both the British and the French these days, after Brexit, they seem to, you know, let loose a little bit when it comes to the rhetoric.
Yes, but we are the frères ennemis as well, so it's a perfide Albion, and there's no much of a surprise maybe there. But I think on the long term, for the relationship and regarding the strategy,
I think it's the United Kingdom, Australia.
It's a pity that we come to this end.
Alice Panier, I know people in French military circles are dismayed at all of this, because, again, they work on a day-to-day basis with the British.
Of course. I think the case of the Franco-US and the Franco-UK relationships are quite similar in the sense that they happen mostly below the political radar, with usually strong political rhetorics on both sides. But I think a few bad words can really hurt many years of hard work at the working level. So that's really a shame. But also in the France-UK case, I think we, on the French side, probably underestimated the harm that was felt in the UK since the start of the Brexit negotiations, that France has been perceived as leading the charge against the UK, or the very hard line that the EU has taken against the UK, and even the threat earlier, I think this year, to cut the electrical power on the Channel Islands, on the Jersey Islands, and the deployment of the British Navy as a sort of a response to that. I think that in the British press, it made huge noise. Right?
It sold newspapers.
It's still newspaper, but also just in people's psyche, in most people's psyche, and it's kind of similar in France, right? It's very difficult to uphold this relationship politically and say, you know, we're friends between the UK and France, even, you know, despite all the shared strategic interests, including in the Indo-Pacific. It's a real shame that the four countries, UK, US, Australia, and France, have not managed to align and come to a common strategy.
And here's an interesting bit. It is UN week. That's when world leaders converge on New York for the start of the General Assembly session. There are speeches. It kicked off this Monday with Boris Johnson chairing an environment summit to prepare for the COP26 environment summit that'll be in Glasgow. The UK Prime Minister, he'll be traveling to the White House Tuesday. It's the first time since Joe Biden replaced Donald Trump. And we remember, Addis, a few weeks back, the UK was critical of the US again over Afghanistan.
Right.
And in this particular case, it's just on the eve of him going there that that all of this is happening?
Right. So I think it's, you know, for as bad as it is for France to be in the situation that it is in, considering this new trilateral alliance between UK, US and Australia, I think for both the UK and Australia, it is a strong sign of a very close partnership that's going to have also some benefits for the UK, only even from an industrial perspective, because Rolls-Royce, probably the British company, will be involved in a contract, will be involved in constructing and building the ships. So considering as well that the nuclear propulsion technology that the US will be exporting likely to Australia via the UK somehow, that's the second time it's happening in history, because the first time was US exporting that technology to the UK. So it's a privilege, it's a huge privilege that will be made to Australia, and the UK will be part of that. So that's a very strong signal sent, you know, within their circle.
Craig Kapitas, Boris Johnson will not just be meeting with Joe Biden. He's also going to sit down with the world's richest man, that is Jeff Bezos, the founder and boss of Amazon. He's going to be asking him to pay more tax. And that may serve also as a reminder that you were talking about it earlier, about the U.S. as a hyperpower. Certainly, it seems like the U.S. owns the internet, and there is this feeling of a mismatch.
Bezos and Amazon have more lawyers and better paid lawyers than the British government when this goes to the court. You know, I think this all goes back to what our other guests were talking about, but what allies and friends are supposed to do. And I think Jeff actually said it best. I had mentioned, why didn't he call Macron? Why didn't Biden call Macron? And Jeff said, and I think correctly, well, it was more than just one phone call. This discussion should have been taking place for months and months and months, and it didn't. And that is what is worrisome here, because, you know, this is exactly why, precisely why a day in 1796 said the French were going to end up the fodder of the rodents and the insects that live up in the attic. And in that dispatch he sent, was one of the first dispatches sent from America to France. He said, quote, "An American is the born enemy of all the peoples of Europe." He wrote that, okay, and I'm told that is actually studied at Les Grandes Écoles here in France. If you want to go into the diplomatic corps, you have to know all this stuff about this history, because it still resonates today.
All right.
And that's what's chilling about this.
All right, but we are getting word. Not, it's not always that bad between the U.S. and France. Let me ask you, we did get an announcement this Monday that those travel restrictions that are keeping foreign nationals from Europe, from the U.K., who haven't in some instances seen family in 18 months in the U.S., yeah. From traveling are going to be lifted. Is that a coincidence of the calendar, Jeffrey?
Well, probably not. No, and it does seem to come suspiciously close to this whole kerfuffle of submarines. But boy, has that been an irritant for the French. Not least of which, because in France there's the sense that perhaps things have rounded the corner on COVID, and in the United States that's certainly not the case, where we have, you know, some, at least in some states, like hospitals overwhelmed and all. So the French are saying, you know, we allow Americans into our country, you know, or the Europeans, but the Americans won't allow us. So that was definitely an irritant. Getting rid of that will help, but that's only just eliminating an irritant. It's not doing something positive to move the relationship forward.
Natalia Pouzieff?
Yeah, I think it will need more to soothe the sore feelings we have at the moment. I think first we need to have some clarifications about the sequence. And then I think we have to find out what can be done next. And together as allies, it's not a good option to distance ourselves in such a peculiar time.
So mending fences rather than the strategic autonomy, building a European defense force parallel to NATO's?
Still, this has to be conducted in parallel, and I think maybe will have an incentive to do so a bit more actively in Europe. I think the next French presidency of the European Union would be a good timing to raise all these topics And we have our close vicinity as well to look at in Mediterranean and so on. But definitely there's something to mend with the American partner.
Yes, definitely the topic for another discussion as France gets set in January to hold the rotating presidency of the EU. Natalia Pouzyreff, I want to thank you so much. I want to thank Alice Panier, Jeffrey Hawkins, Craig Capitis. Thank you for joining us here in the France 24 debate.